Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This is Johnny Gould's Jewish State.
This is a rather special episode of Johnny Gould's Jewish State, featuring a competition winner from a primary school who won the chance to make an episode with me. All because I'm encouraging the next generation to think seriously about journalism and storytelling, not just to take in the TikTok and YouTubers. Awareness of news and current affairs is certainly heightened by the pressure of social media these days. So imagine a young person growing up in this day and age. And so if more children are engaged by the everything is political zeitgeist which today's news seems to exist in, much more invasive than when we were young, it's time this long-in-the-tooth journalist put something back to encourage high-minded journalistic inquiry in that next generation. To show that the heavy lifting of real journalism is as fundamental to our democracy and freedoms as ever. I ran a competition for the pupils of Year 6 at Northwest London Jewish Day School. Now, I said to the class, get me an interesting interviewee and write down the questions you'd like to ask them. And so I was delighted that 11-year-old Bella Bolo stepped up to the plate and secured time with Bill Browder. Bill is an American-born financier based in London, the CEO and co-founder of Hermitage Capital Management, once the largest foreign portfolio investor in Russia. And with his Russian lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, Bill found out his taxes were being misappropriated by middlemen officials in Moscow. So he started exposing large-scale systemic corruption in Russia. He took on large companies such as Gazprom and Sidanko. But when you take on faceless power, the consequences are brutal. In retaliation, in November 2005, Bill was refused entry to Russia, deported to the UK, and declared a threat to national security. But as you'll hear, Bill's story takes on a further tragic and extreme twist.
Sergei Magnitsky was killed primarily and exclusively because he worked for me. If he hadn't been my lawyer, if he hadn't been working for me, if he hadn't exposed the corruption that I asked him to expose, he would still be alive today. Instead, he died at the age of 37. He left a wife and two children. And for me, the burden of guilt and responsibility of him being killed because he was my lawyer has stayed with me ever since.
Bill takes responsibility for this terrible crime. It totally changed the trajectory of his life, both private and commercial. Bill now heads the Global Magnitsky Justice Campaign. As he gives us a snapshot into what Russia has become under Vladimir Putin and how life isn't made up of comfortable decisions. Sometimes we have to take a stand. Many congratulations to Bella Bolo. You secured a great interview and asked a line of questions which challenged our esteemed guest. So here she is in conversation with Bill Browder.
Without further ado, Bella, it's over to you.
Excellent. Nice to meet you.
I'm very excited to meet you too.
And any questions you want?
The first questions I would like to ask are about how and why you came to set up the Global Magnitsky Justice Campaign, about how you fell out with Putin and who exactly was Sergei Magnitsky.
Sure. Good question. I was once a big investor in Russia. I had an investment fund in Russia, and I discovered there was a lot of corruption going on in the country, and I decided to start to expose the corruption. And in response to that, I was expelled from the country, declared a threat to national security, my offices were raided, all of my documents were seized, and I decided to hire a young lawyer in Moscow who was a very smart young man named Sergei Magnitsky, to help me uncover what was going on and investigate. He investigated. He discovered that the documents that were taken from my office were used in a very complicated fraud in which the officials of the Russian government had stolen $230 million of taxes that my company paid to the Russian government. They stole it from the Russian government. He exposed the crime. He testified against the officials involved. And in retaliation, he was arrested by the same officials, put in pretrial detention in jail, tortured in jail for 358 days, and then ultimately killed by 8 riot guards with rubber batons. And he was killed on November 16th, 2009. And I decided to give up my life as a businessman and to devote all of my time, energy, and resources to make sure that the people who killed him face justice. And that's what the Global Magnitsky Justice Campaign is all about, is getting justice for Sergei Magnitsky and to get justice for other victims who have similarly suffered like he did.
Why are you so determined to continue the fight for justice for him?
Well, because Sergei Magnitsky was killed primarily and exclusively because he worked for me. If he hadn't been my lawyer, if he hadn't been working for me, if he hadn't exposed the corruption that I asked him to expose, he would still be alive today. And instead, he died at the age of 37. He left a wife and 2 children. And for me, the burden of guilt and responsibility of him being killed because he was my lawyer has stayed with me ever since. That pain and that feeling that I felt has not dissipated. And the only thing that gives me some peace is knowing that I've done something to make sure that he gets justice and make sure that I do something so that his death wasn't a meaningless death. And that's what keeps me going.
Are you still in touch with the Magnitsky family?
I am indeed. I speak to them regularly. I support them financially. They're now, they left Russia a long time ago. His widow and his younger son, Nikita, live in California, Pasadena, California, and they're doing as well as they can be doing under the circumstances, but they've tried to recover and build a new life.
I'd also like to ask a few more general questions.
Sure.
Would you have left Russia if you hadn't been forced to leave?
That's a great question. And the answer is probably no. Probably no. And if I hadn't left Russia when they hadn't forced me to leave, I'd probably be dead. Because at the time that I was expelled from Russia, Putin wasn't as self-confident a tyrant as he is right now. And I'd probably either be in jail or dead, or maybe in jail and then dead. And so it was very fortunate that they expelled me when they did. Otherwise, I'd have a lot different outcome.
How does it feel knowing that you're wanted by one of Europe's most powerful countries?
Not good. Obviously, my life is in danger. I'm being targeted on a regular basis in all sorts of different ways by them, with arrest warrants, with lawsuits, with movies, with kidnapping plots, with death threats. It's all very terrible, and certainly I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
Your most recent book, Freezing Order, is also translated into many languages, including Russian. But do they allow your books to be sold in Russia?
Good question. The answer is definitely no. I could never find a publisher in Russia for my book, and any publisher who did publish it would probably lose their business. And so what we've decided to do instead was to translate Freezing Order into Russian, and then I offer it for free to Russians online. And many, many people have downloaded it and learned about the story from this online version.
Do you think someone like Alexei Navalny could ever come to power? And if so, do you think they'd be better for Russia?
Are you playing catch-up with Johnny Gould's Jewish State? I've had the pleasure of some really great guests. How about Douglas Murray?
Israel is a rare country in the West in that it does buck many of the trends. I mean, there isn't a fertility rate problem in Israel, for instance, as there is in most European countries. There is a strong feeling of nationhood and of the depths that the country needs to call upon in order to unite its people.
And Hillel Noyer, whose UN Watch keeps check on the excesses and mission creep of the UN human rights in Geneva.
The challenges are great. They're not going away. I am concerned by the cultural revolution that we've experienced in America in the past 5 years, known to some as the woke revolution, where there's a kind of a McCarthyism. If you say something, it could be canceled and fired from your university, from your corporation, from a journalist. And often it's an anti-liberalism. So that, to be honest, really scares me, because we need our democracies to be healthy, to be honest, to be truth tellers. So I am deeply concerned.
If you like Johnny's regular podcasts, think about making a donation at either patreon.com/Johnny Gould or buy him a coffee. He loves coffee. ko-fi.com/Johnny Gould.
The answer is yes and yes. I think it's possible, not highly likely, but possible that if Putin were to lose the war in Ukraine, the Russian people would lose their patience with him. And if they did, they would look for somebody new and outside the system to lead the country. The most prominent political prisoner is probably Alexei Navalny, and he's surely a much better alternative than the dictator, kleptocrat Vladimir Putin.
Do you think the British government has done enough to support the work that you've done?
No. The British government is always too little, too late. They've been very reluctant to help me. They have in certain areas. There is a British Magnitsky Act now, and they've sanctioned the killers of Sergei Magnitsky. But it took the British government 8 years longer than the U.S. government to do the same thing. And so, since I live here, and I actually have been living here for 34 years, I have a British passport, I would have expected a more robust approach towards this issue than I've seen.
And if you're new to Johnny Gould's Jewish State, press the follow button wherever you're listening to this podcast, tell your friends, and scroll back one episode for Jake Wallace Simons, who gave his first interview right here about his new book, Israelophobia, the newest form of the oldest hatred.
You, my friend, with your swivel-eyed fury against the world's only Jewish state that you don't share for any other country in the world, only for the world's Jewish state, you are suffering from Israelophobia. Let's talk about that.
Finally, I'd like to ask a few questions that are of particular interest to me. How has your view of the world changed as a result of your experiences over the past 20 years?
Well, I've learned about some people that I never expected to be heroes to turn out to be amazing heroes, like Sergei Magnitsky, like Alexei Navalny, another friend of mine, Vladimir Karamurza, who is a British citizen and a Russian citizen who went back after the war started to protest the war, and now is sitting in jail after being sentenced to 25 years. He's sort of like the Nelson Mandela of Russia. I've also seen some people that you would think would be heroes turn out to be really scoundrels. There are many what I call Western enablers, people in the West that decided to side with Russia and side with Putin, take the money from Putin in order to stop me from doing what I'm doing, stop the West from standing up firmly to Putin. And that's been a big disappointment. And so, and I guess the third thing is that I've also learned that the institutions that we would expect to support people like me and all of Sergei Magnitsky and others are not really fit for purpose. The government doesn't do what it should do. The government needs to be forced to do what they should do. And that's been sort of frustrating and a bit of a disappointment, but also, I guess, an important realization that if you want to get something done, you have to force the system to do it. You can't just expect the system to do it.
What would be a major thing that you want my generation to learn from everything you've done?
Well, I think the probably the most important thing is that we all need to be leaders in our lives. We all need to stand up for against wrong and for right. We all need to be in our hearts trying to do the right thing. And it's very important for people of your generation to understand that the world is not perfect. And in order for the world to be a better place, we all have to do our part. And we shouldn't expect to sit back and have everything done for us, that we all have to make sacrifices to do things to make the world a better place.
Thank you so much, Mr. Rath.
Bella, thank you. There were some wonderful questions there. Mr. Bowder, thank you very much for answering them with such clarity. May I ask a couple of questions to you? I'm in touch with Yevgenia Kara-Murza because I had the privilege of meeting Vladimir at the Human Rights Conference held by Hillel Neuer in 2018.
Yep.
What message do you have for Yevgenia and indeed for Vladimir as he's incarcerated for such a terribly long time in Russia?
Well, I've been spending an enormous amount of my time and energy trying to raise his profile in the West, trying to create consequences for the Russian government for doing this. And my message for her and for him is that, sit tight. We're not going to let you rot in jail. We're going to come and get you.
And with your Jewish background, sir, we know that there has been a real diplomatic downturn between Russia and Israel, despite the difficult weavings that there are over Syria between Russia and Israel, where there is a below-the-radar cooperation with Israel's security in mind, and yet the Jewish agency has effectively been banned. What is your message for the Russian Jewish community? Is this a country safe for Jews anymore? Should Russian Jews be thinking about leaving for Israel, the West, Canada, the United States, Britain, etc.?
I don't think Russia is safe for anybody, but particularly not for Jewish people. You know, as the country goes further and further in its fascist direction, it's not safe for anybody, but particularly anyone who's a religious minority, ethnic minority of any sort. And I think Russians should get out of there. Any Russian Jew should get out of there at the first opportunity. It's not going to be, there's no good future there for anybody.
What do you think Israel should do in terms of its stance to Russia, to the Ukraine in the war? It is a very, very difficult security situation around their borders, which Russia has cooperated on for many years. And yet, as a sovereign nation, you might think that Israel and Ukraine are much more kindred spirits.
Well, I think that Israel is the whole foundation of Israel is a country that welcomes victims of genocide. That's why Israel exists. We're now watching another genocide taking place in Ukraine, very very clearly stated genocide, and I'm frankly disappointed that Israel, which is a country formed on the basis of a genocide, wouldn't strongly and morally take the position of Ukraine and deal with whatever the issues are with Russia and Syria as a lower priority than is currently doing. It's not convenient for Israel to have this war, but it wasn't convenient for any of the Germans who stood up for the Jews in Germany during the Holocaust. Sometimes you have to do things that are inconvenient, and very much upsets me, Israel's position.
Mr. Browder, thank you very much for your frank and clear words. Bella, thank you for your line of questioning, sir. Thank you very much for your time and for agreeing to do this podcast.
My pleasure, and very, very good questions from you, and congratulations. I have an 11-year-old daughter as well, and it's nice to see young people taking the initiative.
Can I ask Bella, while we're online, why is politics so important to you, and why is this subject so close to your interest and heart?
Well, I grew up with three siblings, so we always had a lot of political discussions during dinner or whenever we sat down. So I've been around a lot of politics, so I just wanted to see for myself.
Well, carry on with your interest. It's good, and it will serve you well.
Thank you.
Thank you to both of you. And thank you. You too. Bye-bye now.
My thanks once again to Bill Browder and Northwest London Jewish Day School competition winner Bella Bolo and headmistress Miss Kaplan and Mr. Radomski. And if this is your first episode of Johnny Gould's Jewish State, you are more than welcome. We always aim to get the biggest guest with the most urgent message, and the previous episode is no exception. Scroll back one for Lord Eric Pickles in conversation with the Right Honourable Joan Ryan.
When they were boycotting South Africa, they were attacking racism. Boycotting Israel is supporting racism.
And if you enjoy my podcast, and if you'd rather it existed than not at all, you can do the right thing today. You can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Johnny Gould.
Apple Podcast number ones throughout the world. Subscribe now and tell your friends.
Johnny Gould's Jewish State.